Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in the second Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samachet, and we're holding on the last three words on Samach Zayin Amud Beit. So the last part of the Mishnah said that Amar Rabbi Akiva, and he says that he learned this from Rabbi Yeshua. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Amar Rabbi Yeshua. This whole business about Kishuv and the difference between Kishuv, real Kishuv, and the difference between Achizas Einayim, that's mashma that Rabbi Akiva learned these dinim about, you know, two people who are going to gather up these beautiful cucumbers and they could do it in different ways. It's mashma that he learned it from Rabbi Yeshua, but we know that that's not true because we have a braita that actually tells us the history of how it is that Rabbi Akiva learned this kind of stuff. Tanya, Kishachala Rabbi Eliezer. I remember the story of Rabbi Eliezer that we learned when we were learning Kelim. So remember there was the terrible story in which there was the Tanur Shel Achnai. And Tanur Shel Achnai was a Tanur that was Mechubar. After it had been cut into separate pieces, whether it was Bekapel Tuma, okay, it was a complex issue that we had in Hilchas Kelim, Tumas Kelim, and there was a machlokes between Rebbe Eliezer and his chaverim, and he argued with the Rov, and he had had a Kabbalah to the halacha the way he had said it, and therefore he couldn't just say, well, you guys are right, because he knew that the opposite was true. Because he wouldn't give in, so they put Rebbe Eliezer into Nidui, because they were afraid that people would learn not to be Mekabel a Rov. In any event, for many years, so people wouldn't come to learn with him. So here he became ill, and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva's friends came together, Levakro. So they want to be Mevakir Chayla, and Rebbe Eliezer was inside a Kinuf Shelo. He was in this bed, which was like, you know, a canopy bed. It was actually a whole area that had been covered by a canopy. And they were sitting like in the living room, in the big room, and he was in his bed. When they came, it was an Erev Shabbos, and Hurkanes, then Rebbe Eliezer, went in to take off Rebbe Eliezer's tefillin, because Rebbe Eliezer held that Shabbos is lots about tefillin. And because of that, if it's Lav Zman Tefillin, you're not allowed to actually wear Tefillin on Shabbos, because at Hashash, maybe you'll end up going out into Rosh Hasharabim, and so on. And, okay, in any event, so he went to take off his father's Tefillin. His father was too ill to take off his Tefillin himself. And Rebbe Eliezer shouted at him and said, get out of here, you idiot. So his garb over Yatzah ben Azifa. So he was embarrassed. His father had made a fool out of him when he came in and was trying just to take off his tefillin. So he went out and he said to the Rabbi Akiva and to the Chaverim, he said to them, I'm very nervous. It seems that Abba is going to die any minute. He seems to have actually lost his mind. And he's, you know, screaming like that for what? And trying to help him. So Eliezer overheard what he has said. So he said, yeah, right. It's your mind and your mother's mind that is insane, not mine. What the heck is wrong with you guys? This is what you're doing? Last few minutes, Erev Shabbos, have you made sure that the cholent is up? You've made sure that the neiros are in back? You've made sure that things that are important are taken care of? Now, those are your skila, you know? Now you're worried about my tefillin. I love this new frumkite, you know? Maybe Abba's going to wear tefillin. This is what I need while I'm sitting here dying and watching my children going some crazy frum way? You guys are insane. That's why I got angry. So you're meniach is your skila vice commissar schwuss? Anyway, so they realize he knows perfectly well what he's doing. So, given Shirocha Chamim Shidatom Yoshevet Alav, they saw that Rebbe Eliezer was absolutely in a full self-awareness. And Nichlus of Yashvulafanav Berichuk Arba Ames. So because of the din of Nidui, so they had to sit four Ames away from it. So they came in and they sat. L'fida Halocha. So Rebbe Eliezer says, why did you people come? Lama batam. So they said to him, we came to learn Torah from you. Amalam v'adach shav lama lo batam, where you been until now? Well, we've been very busy. Lo'ayalanu p'nai. I mean, anyone obviously knew the reason, and he knew the reason. And it was because of the nidui. Anyone say that? So they said, well, we were very busy. Amar lahem, yeah, you're so busy. I'll tell you, I'd be surprised if any of you die a normal death. You're all going to be torn to bits. You're not going to die normally. And Rabbi Akiva says, but what about me? You're the worst of them all, says Rabbi Yezer. You're going to be tortured to death. Shelcha kasha mishalayim. Because Rabbi Akiva, you're the one that had the best mind of here, and you're the one that could have learned the most from me. And like an idiot, you didn't figure out a way to learn from me. You're the worst. Notash bezro tavini chanalibo. He takes his two arms, puts them across his heart, and he says, Oy lachem shtezro tai. Oy vey, my two arms, you're like shtei sifrei teresh in iglolim. You look like a sefer terah wrapped up on my chest. Harbe terah lamadati, v'harbe terah limadati. I learned a lot of terah from my rabbi, and I taught a lot of terah, and I can tell you one thing. Harbe terah lamadati v'lo chasarti mirabotei afil kekelev amalakik ben hayam. I didn't take away from my rabbeim even like a dog that would be sitting there and lapping up, you know, from a giant sea. And that's about how much terror of their terror. That's about how much of their terror that I was able to absorb. And I taught a lot of terror. And I can tell you, with all the terror that I taught, lo chisuni talmidei ela kemikol b'shvil feret. You know what they took? What percentage of my terror? They took like a one time you stick an eyeshadowed stick into the eyeshadow container. How much do you take off? You can't even see what you take out. That's what my Talmidim got out of me all my life. Vlod. I mean, I give you an example. I know 300 different halachas about the dinim of Baharet in terms of Mitzorah. And in my whole life, not one person ever asked me one shaila about any of those halachas. Can you imagine? 300 halachas, Vlod. And not only that, I know 300 halachas of Seder, say 300, say 3,000. V'armila shloshet alafim halachot in these dinim about kishuf, about netiyat kishuim, about how it is that you go about utilizing these magical things to get it looked through as if you planted the kishuim or gathered the kishuim. And in my entire life, there was one person who asked me about that. And this is this guy over here, Akiva ben Yosef. He asked me about that. And the maaser was that me and him, Akiva and I, were mahalchin ayinu baderach, we're walking along the road. And he says to me, Rebbe, lamdeni benitiyat kishuin, tell me some of these dinim about, how do I know the difference between the achizas enayim and the real kishuf? So explain it to me. So amarti davar achad. So I said like one magic word, and nitmali kol hasadeh kishuin. So that filled up the whole field with these cucumbers. And then Akiva says to me, Rebbe, limatani netiatan, lamdeni akiratan. Okay, so now you showed me how to make a field full of kishuin. How do you gather up these kishuin? So amarti davar achad, I said one word, nitkapsu kulan lamakom echad. You thought Dumbledore was good, huh? Take a look at Rebbe Eliezer. So, anyway, that's the only one that ever asked me anything about this, you know? So then they asked Rebbe Eliezer. Now, all the things that they ask him now are things that we already saw that Rebbe Eliezer paskened. So either in a Mishnah or in a Brisa, they wanted to know whether Rebbe Eliezer, over all of these years, whether he had changed his mind about any of these dinim, or whether he still holds the same original halacha. So they asked him about various things that are examples of ore, of leather, that was a Beit Kibul. It had a Beit Kibul in it. And the thing is that leather is written together with sak. So sak va'or. And from sak, we learn that it has to be metalti moli vareka. So that means it needs to have a Beit Kibul in order to be Makabel Tumah. Because of the hekesh of or to sak, the same thing is true of sak. Another question, of or. So now the question is, how about a baseball? So a baseball is made out of leather, but the thing is, it does have a Beit Kibul because you have to fill it up with the inside of the ball. So It's filled up, and then it's sewed. It's sewed shut. So they asked him, what's the din of a baseball? So hakadur. Or what about an imuz? Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think that a form that you make shoes on, is that called a last, or am I making a mistake? I know that I'm right, Doc. Did you?
Yeah, that's what Sabari translates it.
Last. Oh, great. Okay. So, yeah, that was the name. I can't remember like how I know that word, but I'm pretty sure that was the word. Okay. So, if you've got a last, it's made in the same way. They used to make like a shape of a foot, and then they would fill it with foam or whatever they filled it up with and sewed the leather shut. So this was like a human foot, you know, at the same size, and they would use that as a model around which they made the shoes. They would have like different sizes of this for different sizes and shapes of foot. So it was a very easy way to make a custom-made shoe, but it was also the same idea. It was made out of leather, filled with various material to make it full, and then it was sewed shut. Or what about a kamiya? A kamiya is that, you know, you make a little container, you fill it up with either magical writings, or you fill it up with different kinds of good smelling things, or medications. Those were called kamiyas, very popular, and you would sew it up, and it was a base kibul, but it was a base kibul to technical terms. I see that Gavi has a new phone now, and because of that, he's trying to advertise his OnePlus. I'm not in favor of OnePlus, particularly over what you had before, but I wish you luck with it. But now the important thing is don't hide behind your phone, because we're going to need you now, and we need this to be a Gavi idea. This is called a Beit Kibul Ha'asui Limal'ot. So it is a Beit Kibul, but it's made to be permanently filled, like a baseball. So they asked them about the kamiya, is the same kind of thing. Now, a tsror is like one of those little containers that you put in. In this case, they used to use a tsror hamargaliot. They used to use a little leather container. They filled it up with pearls, sewed it shut, and this was rumored to cure your cow of all that elzer. Absolutely guaranteed to make your cow feel better. Well, anyway. And they would also do the same thing for a mishkolet kitana. So there would be a very small weight that can easily be damaged. They make the weights out of lead, and that would be easily damaged. So they had to protect it. They were protected with this small leather case, and then they would make sure that it was sewed up, so it was a Beit Kibul HaSui L'Malot. What do you hold about those things? And Rebbe Eliezer stuck to what he had taught in Kalim, and he said, they're considered to be Tamei. Now, the Chachamim argued because they held that a Beit Kibul HaSui L'Malot is not considered to be a Beit Kibul. That's not considered to be Metalte Molev Reikon. So when you have a ball, you don't think that you're carrying something around in the ball. The ball itself is the kli, and therefore it's not a kli that has a base kibul. But Rebbe Eliezer held that it's still a Beit Kibul, and then there was another machlokas. Suppose the ball gets ripped open, right? So now it clearly is a Beit Kibul. And then it becomes tummy, even according to those who disagree with him. In that case, it would become tummy because it really has a Beit Kibul now because it was ripped open. But can you put it into the mikveh as it is? Or do you have to take out everything that's inside because it's considered to be a chatzitza? So do we say, normally we say something that is meant to be there is not considered to be a chatzitza. So now, according to Rebbe Eliezer, that what is inside is in no way a problem in terms of the tumah of the kli, because he holds that the kli that was also in the malot is still considered to be a kli. So consistent with that, he also holds that you could put the whole thing in the mikveh, and the filling of the baseball is not going to be a chatzitza to the water in the mikveh. So he said, you can actually taharatan b'mashehen. You could put them into the mikveh, the way they are, meaning you don't have to take out all of this stuff that's inside, and that's considered to be part of the baseball. Then they asked him another question, which is, Amina'au, Shi'agabeya imus mahu. What happens if the shoe was finished? And the only thing was that the shoemaker didn't take the shoe off of the last yet. That you don't need a professional to take a shoe off of a last. So because of that, the Chachamim held that this was already considered to be a nigmar, and therefore it was a kli. It was not called a golem kli, and it would be roy to be mekabel tumah, like all clothing would be mekabel tumah. He held that unless it was actually removed and it's now ready to be worn, it still is not considered to be a kli. So he said to them, I still hold that. Hu tahor. That shoe will not be mekabel tumah. And those were the last words he ever said. Yatza nishmato betahara. He died with the word tahor on his lips. Omad Rabbi Yeshua Raglov v'yamar hutar haneder, hutar haneder. The first thing they do is they immediately mevato the nidui, so that he shouldn't, chas v'shalom, be someone that was meis b'niduye, where you have to put an even on top of his mita and so on. It would be a terrible thing to do. So they immediately mevatel the neder, and they were mevatel it. Note that they say utar neder twice, like we do for hataras nedarim, so that, you know, kishem shuta bebezin shamata, ken yemuta bebezin shamala. So this was to completely be mevatel any hashpa of the nidui. And this then was already Shabbos, so Lemitzay Shabbos, they made the Levaya. And Rabbi Akiva, he met up with the Levaya that was going min kisari lalud, ayamake bivisaro achadamosho tetla aretz, and he was banging on himself in such tsar that he literally started to bleed, his blood was falling down to the ground. Why this is not considered to be seret lenefesh, Tosva says, because it wasn't lenefesh. The only isser of tearing it yourself for someone who dies is when it's because of the tsar of the person who died. But over here, Rabbi Akiva, as we'll see, was ovel in the terah that he had lost, and therefore it's not considered to be a seret lenefesh. And there are other kashas that the Achronim ask, why is it not considered to be chovel ba'atzmo? Forget about the specific isulav of seret lenefesh. There's a general iser for adam to be chovel ba'atzmo, which is part of the iser chavola. Someone can't hit somebody else. You can't hit yourself. And over there, so the Rambam, the Lashon of the Rambam, when he talks about being chovel, is only derech nitzayon. He called nitzayon is like for the word nates, in which you, it's usually a word that's used for fighting with, intellectually. You know, so in other words, it means when people get overly excited. So derech nitzayon would mean that you're trying to show an anger at yourself or so on, which is not what this was. This was a sense of just letting out his pain and releasing some of the feelings that he had. And that's not considered to be usher. Okay. Anyway, this is what he kept doing. And posach alav b'shura, and he started saying a hesped while he was still in the shura, and he said, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisroel Fofar Hashav, Harbe Ma'ot Yeshli, I have so much money, large coins, and I don't have a Shulchan Ilar Tzotam, I don't have a banker that I can give it to, we can open it up and give it into change. That was the idea of parsing large things and ideas into all of the details is called, like a Shulchan he does, with your money. And now I don't have anybody to ask. But anyway, bottom line is, from this whole story, what do we see? That Rabbi Akiva had learned the dinim of Kishuv specifically from Rabbi Eliezer. So why does the Mishnah say that Omar Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yeshua? I don't understand. If it was actually from Rabbi Eliezer. So Omar mi Rabbi Eliezer Gemara. It's true. He did learn it from Rabbi Eliezer. But he could not understand what Rabbi Eliezer was saying. In other words, he didn't understand the way that it worked. I mean, you don't understand a halacha by giving over some magical incantation. Then, when he learned it again later, when he was more mature, He learned it from Rabbi Yeshua, and that Rabbi Yeshua, he actually gave him over all of the insights into the workings of it, and that way he was able to apply it la'alocha. But I don't understand. You said Rabbi Eliezer actually gave him a demonstration? I mean, how is Rabbi Eliezer allowed to give him a demonstration? Well, now Tanan, the Mishnah says that if you actually do Kishuv, then you would be chayiv. So how could Rabbi Eliezer do Kishuv? Ah, but teaching is different. So if you're learning it, or you need to be aware of what the halacha is, note what the pasuk says. Lehit lamed is definitely mutter. The Yom Amar, the pasuk in saying that dinim of Kishuv said lo tilmad la'asot, it specifies that when you're talking about the Toayivot Hagoyim Ahim, it says lo tilmad la'asot ketoavat Hagoyim Ahim. So that means that if you're learning in order, la'asoti atalamed, avatalamed in order, la'avin, ulahorot, if you have to learn how to paskin a halacha about it, and you want to be able to say whether someone is chayev or potter, that, of course, you're allowed to do. Hadran alach arba mitod.
And, I'm sorry, isn't it mashma that he hit until the blood came out? That is not hitting in order to take blood out.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not mashma that way, although some try to say that. I think actually the Aruch Laner says that it wasn't bekavana. But I mean the whole point of the Gemara, the pashtus is that like he was trying to release without any limit. It's hard to believe that that's what it means. But your suggestion is definitely brought up by the Acharonim. I'm pretty sure it's the Aruch Laner. Anyway, so now we have this interesting segue over here at the end of the parak. So the last situation that we had was the case of the Midiach, which is different from any of the other Mechuyavei Mitot, because he does not require Hatra'ah and Machminim Lo, right? So, like we say, he's a piece of garbage. That's where we came to understand Hediyot. So there's another case, actually, which is a definite yotze min haklal of all of the normal dinim. It does not require hatra'ah. And this is the case of the ben sorer umore. Okay, so the ben sorer umore is a very strange halacha, which in the end we'll see in the Gemara that it actually, according to most, never happened, never will happen, and it's only there in terms of yagdol ter v'yadir. And learn about it to be Mekabel Zachar. So here are some of the interesting halachas of Ben Sorer Umore. So first of all, what is the age which we call a Ben Sorer Umore? I mean, what are we talking about? So imatai naaseh Ben Sorer Umore. Does this mean that this is like an 8-year-old kid? I mean, what are we talking about? So he has to be a gadol, can't be literally a katan. So he has to be, after puberty, mishyavish de sarots, when he first, he's already obviously of the correct age, he's already 13, from the time that he presents these shtei sarot that are a proof of his having reached puberty, ad sheyakif zakan, until he ends up getting a beard. But a beard does not mean a facial beard. A beard means a pubic beard. Hatachton v'lo ha'elyon. So what we're really referring to is pubic hair that surrounds the penis completely, not the beard on his face. They talked about a beard, sort of a nice way to say it, but it's not, they didn't want to get too detailed. And where do we get this from? Shenema ki'yeh le'ish bein. So now, first of all, a man has a son. So first of all, it's clearly a bain, not a bat. So it's saying dafka, a son. Daughters are not included in this din of a ben sorer umore. But also, he needs to be a bain, but not a fully grown ish. So, okay. So first of all, it's quite clear, isn't it, that a katam is potter. I mean, if he wouldn't even be a gadol, so then how could we punish him. I mean, he's not even a balakal mitzvot. He's not responsible for anything. So then it's pretty clear that he would have to be a gadol, because it doesn't make sense that we would actually go ahead and punish for what? He's not mukhliyev, and he's not punished for anything else. So he's got to be a gadol. But if he's a gadol, so then how is he a ben? I mean, we don't have like a middle stage, do we? So a katan would be pater shloba lichlal mitzvot. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to explain, where do we get this idea from, that there's this period in which somebody becomes a ben sora moret? So katan minolan de pater. You're telling me that it's obvious, you say in the Mishnah, that a child is pater. How do we know that? What? Minolan? What the heck are you talking about? The Mishnah said, because a katan is not chayiv any mitzvahs. I mean, and what kind of weird question is that? Can you show me one place where the Torah says that a katan is chayiv, that you're asking me, and how do I know a katan is pater? What the heck is going on over here? Minolan? Somebody's lost his mind? Show me one place where a katan is chayiv, that now you need a pasuk to tell me that the katan is pater. That's crazy. Says the Gemara, you're missing the whole point. A ben sorer umore is not a punishment, okay? It's not that he did some kind of chait. So, otu ben sorer umore cheto nerag. Is he being punished for having done something wrong? Of course not. I mean, what did he do wrong? He ate and drank. He took a couple of pennies from his father's wallet. This is called something that you're going to give somebody skila for? Obviously not. It's all al shem sofo nerak. He is only killed because, as we'll see later on, the whole idea is that the Torah was emed, that sofo, he's going to end up being mevakesh eslimuda, he's emed melastim esabrias, he's going to become a murderer, God help us, he's going to get into drugs, that'll be the end of him, better get rid of him early. So how do we know he has to be a gadol? If that's the case, I mean, that's the very reason that we don't have any hasra for ben sora umora. The whole thing is clearly a completely different halacha. And we also have a din that we give him malchus before it says v'yisruoto, before it becomes a ben sora umora. We beat him up in Bezdin. And so what's that? I mean, then he's still a katan, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So, I mean, how do we give a katan malchus? You know, there's a whole big mimer from Reb Chaim on this. Replying Brisker. And obviously these are dinim that have to do with a special halacha of a ben sora umora, nothing to do with the normal dinim of malchus that would require hasra or anything like that, because it's not malchus for something. So if that's the case, that he's not al cheto nerag, he's only al shem sofo nerag, I would have thought, given the al shem sofo nerag, afilu katanami, why are you so certain that, well, I mean, you couldn't be referring to cotton. Why not? The whole thing is insane anyway. So maybe if we're going to kill a 13-year-old, we can kill a 12-year-old. I mean, that is where you get the idea that a cotton is not going to be chayav. If not to mention that, I mean, when it says v'chiye le'ish bein, I mean, so doesn't that mean that he is not an ish? The pashtus would be that he is indeed still a cotton. And you're saying, well, it's given. He can't possibly be a cotton. So I'm asking you a very intelligent question. Why are you so sure about that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Kra, ki ye le'ish bein. The reason that we know that it can't be a katan. One second, please, here. Just take some medication. Is because when it says ki ye le'ish bein, we're applying that word ish to the bein. So in other words, what it means is that when this manling, so to speak, is still a bein, that means that he's a bein asamuch legvurato shel ish. He's right before he gets the virility of a full man, but he is therefore within range. He's got a shot at this full virility. So we're calling this full virility to be adshe yakif hazakan, and that would be the total ish, and there's this short period between the beginning of puberty and filling out his full strength, which we say is Achyakiv Zakan, and it means Zakan HaTachton. Tony Rebbe here, Ad Sheyakif Atara. So it means that you get like a crown around the pubes. What? Or, that's one way of understanding it, or Kiyasar of Dimi Amar, what we're referring to over here is Hakafat Kid, the low Hakafat Betzim, which may mean that he understands Achi Akif Atara differently than, the pshat that I said is some of the Rishonim say, Achi Akif Atara, which is weird, because as we know, the Atara is part of the penis. To use that word in this context as saying just, it means like around an Atara, like a crown, is a little hard to believe. It's more possible that we don't have any word in Hebrew that refers specifically to the shaft of the penis, which is what it's referring to over here. And that's why Rav Dimi explains, please mute, Hakafat Gid v'lo Hakafat Beitzim. What this means is that there has to be hair around the entire base of the penis, which does not include hair that is growing around the testicles. That doesn't count. So that's why, maybe that's why he uses the word Atara, because you're talking about a little child. Basically, that's all that you'll see of him, is you'll just see the part of his penis that remains visible. So it means that the Atara looks like it's completely covered. Omer of Chista, Katan Shaholid, Ein Bino Naaseh Ben Sorer Umoreh. If a Katan has a child, so obviously he holds that that means that a Katan can have a child. We're going to see. We're going to discuss this in a moment. His child cannot be a ben sorer amoreh because it says ki ela ish ben. Only an ish can have a ben sorer amoreh, but not a ben. So the ben of a ben cannot be called a ben sorer amoreh. Ask the Gemara, but we need that pasuk. Didn't we just say that we're derish from that pasuk that when he's korayf to be an ish, he's a bain at the stage of being an ish, that that's the stage, which means from the time that he's maybe shteis ares, achi akiv zakan, right? So how can you use the pasuk to teach me this new halacha that a bain of a bain is not considered to be a ben sorer amoreh? Didn't we just need that for a bino merav, which was the whole mocker, that it can't be a katan, he must already have gotten ishtei sarot? Answers the Gemara. Because if Rav's pshat, Rav Yonam Rav, was the only thing, so then the pasuk could have said, ki ye bein le'ish. And you don't have to say all it needed to say, that when this bein is like the ish, you could have had the bein before mentioning the ish. Why do you say kiela ish bein? Because saying it that way would have given the same kind of mashmaut of Rav, a bein that is korov to being a full man, bein la ish. So why does it say le ish bein? Which is a little weird. In saying it that way, it makes it a little more awkward. So that is coming to tell me Rav Chista's limud, namely, that it's also teaching me this new halacha, that Shmar Minalek Rav Chista, that the father has to be an ish and not a bein. Wait, so if that's what you're telling me I can use it for, maybe that's all I have a right to use it for. How do I know that I also can learn out the as bikor of la'ish? Because in Cain, if it's only coming to tell me Rav Chista, name a kra ben ish. Look, you want to say that a ben ish can become a ben sorer amoreh, just say, ki ye ben ish sorer amoreh. Okay, well, what do you mean la'ish bein? So you see two different things from here. We have both Rav Chista's halacha, namely that the father has to be an ish, and Rav's halacha, that the bein has to be samuch to being an ish. Now, Rav Chista says that if this child has a child, that then the din is that that child will not become a ben sorer amoreh. So obviously, according to Rav Chista, it means that a child can have a child. But this is an argument, because Rabbah says very clearly, katan eino moli. The child is simply incapable of fathering a child. Shenemar, v'im ein le'ish go'el. So here we have a person who swore that he doesn't owe money, and the din is that he has to give that money back and bring a korban when he's made it. So the pasuk continues, im ein le'ish go'el, that then the halacha is that he's supposed to give, of course, what is this talking about? It's talking about Gezel Hager. So this person that had kept the money, stolen the money, denied it with a shvuah, he never had a child once he became a ger. So who's he going to return it to? So there's no such thing, because as we learned the dinim of Yerusha, you simply keep going up the line until you hit somebody, and then you go down the line until you come to someone 40 generations later. I mean, if there's still a Jew alive, then there's going to be a Yoresh, right? So it's got to be talking about a Gezel Hager HaKatuv Medaber. Now, the Torah said over here, the Omer Achmana Ish. Why does it say Ish? I mean, you say Ein Lo Goel. So therefore, it's coming to teach me that only if he's an Ish, Atatzrich Lachzor Alavim Yesh Lo Goelim. So if he's an Ish, you must be certain that Ein Lo Ish Goel. But if he's not an Ish, Im Lav, if he's not an Ish, so then Katan, Yatatzrich Lachzor Alav. If you have that money and you're trying to figure out who to give it back to, don't bother looking. Just give it directly back to the Kohen that you would have been giving it to if you know 100% that he didn't have any children. Well, I tell you 100%, that's what the pasuk is saying. Biyadua she'en lo goelim. So this proves my point, that a child doesn't have a child. Therefore, the Torah says, Dafka, Ish.